Name, Jason Horsley. Profession, Liminalist. This is The Liminalist, the podcast in between. You are now listening. You can walk an island way and you work all the dough and dust. Your eyes were staring at me while playing your guitar.
I came walking a long way just for another chap. Then I saw her in the crowd and I looked her in the eyes.
Due to unforeseen circumstances, I ended up with no podcast this week, so here is one from the unused archives. So I kind of imagine it like a line. It's like this line. It's a non-dimensional line, because it's not just like a, you know, a two-dimensional line, not like a piece of string, but it's like this line that cuts through my body and the whole of reality and that whole environment. And that line is like something's coming through it, something bleeding through it, which is this feeling of well-being. And the line, I mean, is really like, it's just the interior of the body, but it's not the whole. It's not like my organs or anything. It's just, I can't describe it. See, I'm having a hard time, but wherever I put my attention in my body, that line is there. It's like the same line that cuts through the whole body, as it were. It's just sort of, I guess it is like a transmission, because it's like there's something, there's a signal coming through that line, which is a sensational signal. It's a sensory one. It's not like information or anything. It's just a sensation, and it brings with it this feeling of well-being. And so when I was losing that sense of that line, and going back into my mind and having all these negative feelings and stuff, it didn't matter to begin with, because I was like, oh wow, this is just me going into my head now, but the line is still there. And so even if I couldn't necessarily go back to the line, the fact that I knew it was there, I just put my attention on the body and I'm like, oh yeah, that's where the line is. Even if I couldn't actually feel it, at least I knew where it was, kind of thing. If that makes sense.
Sounds like the same. Yeah, it does to me. Sounds like the same thing to me. It's ever present. It's always there. It doesn't go away. You can return to it anytime you need or want to. So it's okay if you stray from it, because it's always there.
Right.
Once you have a solid enough experience of it and of it always being there and always available if you need it or want it, that allows you to stray a little bit more confidently, in theory, I would think.
Yes. So, but I would say today and right now even, although talking about it helps, I stray too far, because the thoughts basically that something's wrong, that's the essential nature of these thoughts and feelings, that something's wrong. And it's a feeling of being pursued in some way, almost like running from something, but also trying to get to something. So it's a feeling of trying to get to some point in the future where everything will be good, that we know very well, but also this feeling of there's something hounding me that I need to get away from. So there's just a feeling of anxiety, basically. I guess that's, if you condense it down, boil it down, it's just this feeling of sort of baseline anxiety, and that takes over, because that's the antithesis, right? That feeling of anxiety is the antithesis of the line of well-being. And it is kind of like something is hacked in. I mean, because it's not the thing about the line, what makes it what gives it that, the what allows for the feeling that it's always there and you can always go back to it, is it's coming from the very deepest part of me. Whereas this other feeling is doesn't seem, it feels like the opposite. It feels like it's, yeah, just like it's coming from the other the other side or something, right?
Yeah.
Because thoughts come internally, but they don't come from the same place as that feeling, right? Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, that whole idea of being invaded, I think is a tricky one, because it can make a person paranoid and cause castanede, you know, end up fighting demons. But I think it may be accurate in some way.
Yeah. I'd like to think about it some more in terms of what experience of my own could be likened to that, like an invasion.
Well, what happens to the part, the anxiety and all that, the bullshit that makes life intolerable, when we're in that paper thin line place and just tuned into that? What happens to that, all of that?
Where is the bullshit? Yeah. Well, bullshit might be there all the time too, but when we're tuned into the paper thin experience, the line, maybe we're just no longer sensitive to that, open to it.
It's like it doesn't
so
matter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter, yeah. If I'm relaxed, then I'm okay, like now, where I let all those tensions flow through and don't focus on them or react to them, basically. It's the reaction. It's reacting in that fight, flight, that tension reaction that you have. Even if fight, flight aren't two options being considered, there's a tension that comes before flight, flight, where it tense, then the decision, flight or flight, you know? The tension comes and then the options. Are presented to you. But if you let the tension flow, you don't get to that fight or flight. So the bullshit is still there, but I've gotten past the tension, the relaxation has come, so it's like the bullshit's there, but it doesn't exist. The bullshit only exists, the bullshit is created from my reaction to it. This is bullshit, you know, I could be irked by it and say, this is bullshit. And then that would start a flow of tension, thoughts, tense thoughts, angry thoughts.
Right, you match it. You match the bullshit, and then you become bullshit.
Right, exactly. One thing that seemed to me, or seems to me to be possibly a thing to do, a technique, a way to at least dredge up these kinds of, this kind of material and deal with it, would be to deliberately seek out a environment where normally you, is like, not completely antithetical, like you're Morocco, you know, throwing yourself into this foreign land. But let's say, imagine yourself going to a football match, soccer, you know what I mean? And sit there with this crowd of people who are into the game and sit there and try to relax. Do you think you could do something like that? Go to this place of, this is not where you want to be and not the people you want to be around with, and definitely not the time in their life that you want to be around them. Which is at a soccer match.
Yeah.
Football match, whatever. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Leaving the comfort zone.
Right, leave the comfort zone. Go to, you know, places that would be particularly irksome to you, you know. Of course you could theoretically see that bullshit, this is bullshit, that I got to get out of here, the fight or flight, you know. Animosity towards these people, and then I want to get out of here. That's fight or flight right there. Put you back in the tension. Because you're reacting to things, because you're sensing the bullshit. There's bullshit all around you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could go to a football match once a week until eventually you get to the point where you could sit there completely relaxed and not even, you could be in the middle of a meadow, you know. You're the only person there, you know. Perfect day. but you're in the middle of a, you know, a crowded stadium chock full of people at a, you know, football game, basically, you know, you can potentially see the use of doing something like that. Now, that's not exactly deliberately causing trauma to lead to these transcendent experiences like we talked about, but it is a kind of trauma, subjecting yourself to
discomfort,
something that you get to discomfort, something you feel is antithetical, but a much more sedate, lower level version of that, rather than, you know, have somebody, you know, throw you in a trunk and drive you out to the country and lock you in a shack for a month and, you know, beat you every day or something like that. Even though it might feel that way at a, you know, it's like, oh, I'll never go there, because you could equate your, that sort of torture experience with, say, a football match. It's like, well, it's not exactly torture, you know, it's, you would, you know.
So there's a line here. There's a line here. I mean, because some people are doing this now, you know, the torture is entertainment thing, and people are, you know, like Disneyland, except you get tortured, you get to simulate a kidnapping, and have you heard about this?
No, I haven't heard about this.
Oh, well, it's... yeah, it's...
I'm glad I don't pay attention to anything.
It's pretty bizarre. There's some confusion about how it's legal. It's in the US, of course. But companies that basically offer the torture experience, and they get people there. Some of them are doing it for free, which is a bit weird, I think. I mean, you can do the research. I haven't researched. I picked it up from various people. But they get you to sign a waiver thing beforehand that you won't press charges no matter what happens. And apparently a lot of people don't realize, anyway, maybe they will now because it's getting, there's more publicity, but of how severe it's going to be, that it really is. It's not just a game. They're not just simulating. The people who are conducting it can do what the hell they want with you. Once you sign that form, they can't kill you. People go through these horrendous experiences of being tortured, and apparently, again, this is all alleged, it's filmed and there's live stream, and then people are paying. You can imagine the kind of people, we talk about them sometimes, those rich psychopathic kinds, are paying to tell the torturers what to do. So that's how they make the money. The clients who are being tortured don't have to pay. They just volunteer to have this really intense experience. Maybe not realizing just how intense it's going to be. And then, obviously, once they're in there, it doesn't matter how much they shout and scream, they want to get out, it's too late, right? But then they do survive and they come out the other end. This I haven't heard about, you know, what people say about the other end and whether anyone's tried to press charges. But I can imagine how people would come through, I'm thinking guys, would come through that experience, and even though they were, you know, bawling their eyes out and calling for their mama while they were in there, once they're out the other side, they're like, oh yeah, that was a good experience, now I know what it's like to be tortured, right?
Yeah.
Just as an example of what we're talking about, like, there's a line between discomfort that doesn't push you over the edge where you dissociate and you're being re-traumatized. You're not just in a place of real discomfort where you're getting triggered and then past traumas are coming into awareness. That can be cathartic. But if you're actually being re-traumatized, what happens, I think, is you dissociate, and you may have a spiritual vision or come out saying, yeah, that was great, because you dissociated, and dissociation floods the body, releases all these, whatever, dopamine or whatever those chemicals are. I don't keep track of all the different chemicals now, but the equivalent of morphine anyway, where you get blissed out. Like people who cut themselves, that's a big part of it. They want to release those chemicals in the body, they go to the brain and they get high, right?
Yeah.
So that would be the line that I think is worth exploring, because what you're describing, I would say even that, like, you and I, we're not going to go to a fucking football match to do that, are we? Because who needs it? You've got a job, I got a wife.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, we have plenty of experiences to give you that, but if you didn't have that in your life, you could seek that out. Or if you say, well, I have random occasional experiences, I need a more regular experience of this because I'm on a path that would help me on. Then you might go to a few matches, you know, for a couple months, every week you go to one, you know, kind of thing. But we have no need of that, I don't think. It's just something you could do.
Yeah, I mean, it's at a certain point, it needs to be organic anyway, I think. And like when I got this house, I wasn't thinking, oh, that will cause lots of stress and I'll have an opportunity to really learn relaxation in the face of difficult circumstances. It wasn't contrived like that. It was, it's the only house I can afford, and yeah, I'm sure there will be, you know, psychological benefits, but essentially it was organic. And yeah, and so I would say life, I mean, the physical environment itself is, if we allow ourselves to interact with it, our physical environment, which would include a shitty job like you have, is giving us ample opportunities to experience discomfort and stress and all the rest of it.
That distinction between the organic and then that artificially hyped up hyper version where you're forcing it and going further, that again goes back to that the idea of spiritual bodybuilders, like I mentioned. You know, when you're an actual bodybuilder, you lift the weights. You're supposed to lift the heaviest weight you could possibly lift because your muscles are actually built up by tearing and damaging the muscle, and when it builds back, that's how you build up the muscle.
Yeah, traumatizing.
And that idea of these people on a spiritual path where they're doing these, constantly doing these things, these extreme things, and going further and, you know, going off to, let's say, an ashram. It's like they spend 10 years in an ashram to become spiritually whatever, you know? That would be spiritual bodybuilding versus the organic, you know, I'm going to take what comes in my life and I'm going to, you know, try to utilize it, what comes my way, organically to the utmost of my ability.
Shouldn't eat anything straight from the trough, like you should drink straight from the vase. Now the weather out here is unfit for a beast, still I search for a beast for a mate. My engine won't run if it don't have the grease, which I drink by the dam, by the crate. And the man with no hands at the meat cutter's dance is the one who's really in charge of the food and the booze and the pairs of short pants you can have when we're out on the barge. Now the miners are drinking their grenadine shine while the farmers are downshifting coal. She went at the door and she left me behind while her python remained on patrol. Now don't try to tell me that I look underfed and you'll treat me to dinner for three. No thanks for the offer, I'm staying in bed, just myself and my tapeworm and me. And the man with no hands at the meat cutter's dance is the one who's really in charge of the food and the booze and the pairs of short pants you can have when we're out on the barge. Now the dazzling drunkards who drink in this place will strangle you just for your change. Pay for their outfits of rhinestones and lace, which they wear when they're riding the rain. Now how can a man ride the back of a horse when he can't hit the front of a whale? The answer is found And as a matter of course, once you suck all the wind from the sails, and the man with no hands at the meat cutter's dance is the one who's really in charge of the food and the booze and the pairs of short pants you can have when we're out on the barge. Yes, the man with no hands at the meat cutter's dance is the one who's really in charge of the food and the booze and the pairs of short pants you can have when we're out on the barge.
So yeah, when you're talking about these bodybuilders, of course, there's also the psychedelic users would be another example. They're taking heroic doses of hallucinogens, going through these terrifying journeys, and then coming out the other side thinking, yeah, wow, I really processed my darkness there, and, you know, feeling whatever, you know, spiritualized by that. And occultists as well, they do their rituals, right, and they invoke demons and angels, and that's pretty harrowing stuff also, but I'd say the same.
Yeah.
Same applies.
Yeah. That's the old voluntary self-derangement thing.
Derangement of the senses, yeah.
VSD. Voluntary self-derangement as a drug. You could use a drug, of course, but you can also just believe extreme things and, you know, go the occult route or whatever.
Right.
Or believe things in an as-if sort of, you know, but go really, really, really far with it. Instead of, you know, just like a thing that you do for a week or two, or, you know, while you're working on a project or occasionally.
Yeah, so I guess we've both, in our different ways, we've been, I mean, you've made a shot at being the great American psychopath, and I've made a shot at being the one, the great super shaman guy, right? So we've developed a certain amount of weariness and cynicism towards that path, the path of self-development.
Yeah.
Through will, you know?
Yeah, spiritual bodybuilding. Yes, I would say so. That's my general impression as well.
So where I'm at now is kind of, and it was coming up when you were talking earlier about the bullshit. How I was saying, oh yeah, that's when we match the bullshit, we become bullshit too. I've been thinking recently that I'm pretty much down on everything now. You know?
Yeah.
Like, whatever it is, you know, what have you got, I'll piss on it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
For your certainty, obviously you can relate to that.
Oh yeah.
So, but I'm wondering, like, is that too easy? After a certain point, that's got to become fruitless, right? Because
right, yeah, that can trap too. But, you know, it's like a lot of things. It's like you kind of got to approach that stage and kind of be there and hang out in it and see what it's about, you know, and then maybe kind of pull back a little bit. But yeah, you could go too far with that as well.
Well, not necessarily too far, but just stay in it too long, like, because it can become comfortable, huh?
Yeah, oh yeah, it becomes more ego again. It's like, oh, now I'm the guy who pisses on everything, and you're always pissing on stuff. It's like, okay, now you're creating another thing that doesn't exist, you know, another fantasy self, which is fine if you realize it's a fantasy, but of course if you, that's who you are all the time, it's no longer a fucking fantasy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At some level you actually believe that's who I am, and I've found the answer, I've got the secret, it's on everything, you know. I don't want to do that either, you know.
Well, because the only reason to debunk everything as I've been doing is to clear away all the bullshit and find the true. That would be the only reason. Otherwise, if it's all bullshit, you might as well just pick your favorite bullshit and go with that.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. But we're kind of going back, I think, in the vicinity of the middle path, the idea of the middle path, you know? So you can veer this way, veer that way, you kind of like readjust. Becoming, you know, a debunker, that's kind of a pulling away from another extreme. But then keep on going, now you're going in that extreme. And I pull back. You're constantly adjusting, I think, is what it is. But, yeah. Best way to do that, how to do that, exactly what is your mission, what truth are you looking for, you know. All the particulars of your own situation and your own interests and your own thoughts are going to basically determine the kind of pattern that you're going to follow. You have yours and I have mine, and, you know, there's similarity there. You know, maybe right now what I need to do is just continue to just keep going to work and doing my thing and working through my shit with these people, and then you're, you know, doing your own debunkery and all the other whatever else you're doing.
Yeah, well, when the line is, the frequency, whatever the hell we're going to call it, is palpable and it's tangible, a big part of the message of the signal or whatever, again, call it, is I can't not fall back on cliche. I mean, anything I say is going to be cliche here, but it's just the knowing, the certainty that there isn't anything to do. There actually isn't anything to do. Right? There's nothing to get or achieve or prove or accomplish. Or get free of, or that. Otherwise, if it wasn't that, then it wouldn't be the thing. I mean, it wouldn't be well-being, right? Mm-hmm. So the inverse of that, and I think this is where this has happened to me so many times, is I connect to that thing, the thing that I, no word, every word I come up with pisses me off. I have to use it, so that's part of the problem is language, but. Connect to that thing, and then I want to talk about the thing. Then I want to analyze it and interpret it and kind of make the thing something that is my thing. And I can bring to other people, but I can also get lots of credit and gratitude for bringing it to them, I suppose. But anyway, that begins, like the mind gets hold of the sensation, and it's like, oh wow, this is really cool, let's see how we can break this one apart and, you know, market it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not literally, but, you know, the mind is like a merchant. And then, of course, I start to lose it. I've had that experience many times. But it's helping me to become aware of something then, which is just generally like when I'm not sufficiently in that place where there's nothing that needs to be done, and I continue doing stuff from that place. That's the thing, not as I just become completely inert and bliss out on the thing feeling, not at all. But I'm doing stuff without the same amount of hunger or, you know, drive. I'm just doing it because I can, right? That I've noticed how, and I don't even know what I'm going to say here, but it's sort of a vague, ephemeral thing, but it has to do with ideas and concepts in the mind, and how I'm basically, except when I'm resting in that thing, I'm constantly chasing the next idea, really. Whatever it is, might be an idea of a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
More likely it's an idea of a podcast or a guest on a podcast or, you know, a book or a new article, and it's something that I've done with my, you know, me, I did that,
yeah,
kind of thing. And those ideas, it's like I can build castles out of them. Although they're great fun to do, and as I say, I keep doing them even when I'm in a place where I don't feel the need to do anything. But essentially, it's getting immersed in the doing of things that pulls me out of the thing. the one thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to put it in words.
So,
I mean, I'm hoping to say it in a way that I haven't already said it, because it's, these are things that I've said and thought before, but it's a new experience of them. But essentially, it's going from a body experience to a mental experience. That's really all I'm saying here. But just kind of trying to lay out the way it happens and how there's these. It's a bit like, I guess it's like Buddha sitting by the tree, right? You could, things keep coming up and saying, here, try this, try that. And he's like, no, no, no. You know, he just has to say no to everything. Yeah. It's like that.
Yeah.
So that's the debunking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They seem to be internally generated ideas. They're my things, right? That's what gives them appeal. But really they're not, because even the thing isn't my thing, and that's the real thing, right? Not Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? That if I keep debunking and saying no to stuff, then there has to be a yes behind all of those no's. Otherwise, it's just not empty nihilism as opposed to full nihilism. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the nihilism that just says fuck everything, I can do what I want kind of nihilism, as opposed to reject everything so that you can give yourself to the one thing. So then. So all the no's contain a yes, but I'm afraid that there's this risk, the guru trap, which is if I start saying yes instead of lots of no's that have a hidden yes in them, if I start naming the yes thing, then that will become one of these ideas that actually is big enough to pull me out of the thing.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm bored. I'm really fucking bored. I'm shit, fuck, fuck, face, bumhole, cunt, cock, ah, fuck, fucking bored. I'm fuckhole, dick balls, man, be butt cheek, ah, face, it, fuck, tick, crack, cunt, hole, fuck, bug, reefs at me, train, fuck, lord, burn, piss, hell, fuck, cunt, face, shit, all bored. Fuck, I'm bored. I'm bored. I'm bored. I'm Ken Doan's painting bored. I'm emo fucking goth at nightclub with no friendship bored. I'm no fuck buck crunch anus asshole rim job dirty Sanchez fuck lord bum job head job cunt job 6-5 whiz bang ding dong dickhead fucking bored. I'm really fucking bored.
It's really fucking bored.
I'm so bored I wrote a song about the fact that I'm so bored. I'd like to say I'm fine, but I'd be lying through the floor, because I'm really, really, really fucking bored. I'm bored, I'm bored. Fuck, I'm fucking bored. Fucking bored.
No, you can't be that bored.
Wanna bet? I'm bored, fucking bored. You want to know how bored? I'm watching Deal or No Deal with your grandma, fucking bored. I'm Yahtzee, bingo, bus rides, puzzles, dog, you dishwash, shoe shop, Canberra, airport, phone bill, homework, poems, daytime TV, Peter Frampton, bored. It's pretty fucking bored. Fuck, I'm bored. I'm watching Big Brother bored. I'm reading Richard Branson's autobiography, fucking bored. I'm lunch with girlfriends, parents, Easter, Women's Weekly, Blair Witch Project, Pearl Jam, churches, books by Plato, modern artist, Garfield, fucking bored. Fuck. I'm really fucking bored.
It's really fucking bored.
I'm so bored I wrote a song about the fact that I'm so bored. I'd like to say I'm fine, but I've been lying through the floor, because I'm really, really, really fucking bored. I'm bored, I'm bored. Fuck, I'm bored. I'm shit, fuck, whore, cunt, ass, crack, fucking bored.
Yeah. There's a temptation, you know. It's like once you feel you're close to the thing, then you want to name it. But then if you name it, then you're, you know, you end up in that trap again. So, I don't know.
Because if you don't name it, how can you affirm it?
Right. Exactly. If you can't name it, how can you affirm it? And, it's difficult. Because not naming can also become a thing that you become, you know, obsessed with too. So I don't want to name it. Why don't I want to not name it? I don't want to not name it. I don't want to not name it. I want to nom. Just, you know, then you start babbling like a fucking idiot, like I do mostly, usually.
Yeah, because naming is, you're using it figuratively, really, because literally we can't name it. I mean, we actually can't. We could, but we can't, because whatever, call it.
We
can now
name it for it.
So, but it's figurative. Yeah. Like, naming is symbolic of something else. It's fixing it. We don't want to fix it.
Yeah.
Because it can't be fixed. So if you fix it, then that's not it.
Yeah.
You'll then...
And you... Right.
Because we can create surrogates. That's the genius, isn't it? I mean, if we fix it, if we try to fix it, it moves. But hey, we've got this wonderful box that we think we've caught it, and we'll just never open it, and we'll just tell ourselves.
Yeah. Schrodinger's cat. We'll never know. The cat will live forever.
So, it seems to me it's better. It is better to be to just say no to everything, but underneath the no, there's a yes, and those who discern can see that it's positive nihilism. This is positive nihilism.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, now I've named it.
Yeah, I mean, you named it again. Yeah. You make a list of names. Positive nihilism. Trademark, Jason Horsley. Yeah?
Well, I was seeing today, I'm doing a lot of talking here, so I don't want to cramp your style, but it occurred to me that it doesn't really matter so much what somebody's interest is. What matters is whether they're committed to finding what's real. Like, I think that this is a very rare quality in people, in individuals, to actually be sufficiently committed to find what's real, to be able to say no even to your own fondest delusions when the time comes and just keep looking.
Yeah. There's that phrase, open-minded skepticism. Meaning, you know, you're still looking, basically. Just because you're skeptical doesn't mean you're not, you know, if you were a disbeliever, you would believe.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't, or you would deny, or you would fight. You're being skeptical, but you're still listening, you know? You're still open because there's something there, and you're kind of hovering there on the outskirts, and you got your eyes open. You got your eyes wide open all the time. Like Johnny Cash said, you know? And you're looking. Haven't stopped. I mean, I've gone through years where I haven't read or thought through a lot of things, but it's always there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's always something tuned, waiting.
That's something I'm wondering about at the moment. In terms, because if I'm putting out a lot of material there, which a lot of it isn't directed addressing trauma and dissociation and The Guardian and all that stuff, but some of it is, and basically that's always there, and I'm certainly getting closer to, I feel that I'm certainly getting closer to some sort of breakthrough, let's say. Don't like using big words, but anyway. People are going to be triggered. And I've had other kind of responses like this where it seems to be all the person is saying is, stop talking about trauma!
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But without saying it, without actually acknowledging or perhaps even being aware that it's making them uncomfortable, they're coming up with these rational arguments against talking about it. And congruent with that, probably related, is I'm aware of, I'm becoming something of a fundamentalist Everything comes down to the psyche. Everything comes down to the fact that we are traumatized, the psyche fragmented, and we dissociate. And until we look at that and acknowledge that that is coloring all of our perceptions of everything, then we're not playing with a full deck. Not that we are playing with a full deck just by acknowledging that, but at least we're acknowledging that we're not playing with a full deck, put it that way. If we keep thinking that we've got a full deck when we don't, we're going to be making these ridiculous gambits or gambles or whatever, you know, plays that just based on, not based on reality. So yeah, to me that's become like this really fundamental reality that has to be acknowledged. And so I'm kind of becoming quite, I wouldn't say I'm becoming like fanatical about it, but just very firm about it. I say, look, acknowledge the dissociation, acknowledge the trauma, or fuck off.
Yeah, okay, I acknowledge it, I acknowledge it.
Sit and watch a silent movie. Make up words to pass the time. Then I dream that I've been sailing on my blue sea. And it's all I got to get me by. All I got to get me by.
I never just relax, you know. I never just, you know, get totally into a thing. I have my moments where I relax, you know, but I don't, there's always a little thing there, you know. It's less and less each time, and that's kind of what I'm working towards, is, you know,
Have you noticed today in this conversation, have you been aware of us changing tempo quite a bit as it's proceeded?
Yeah, I noticed there has been a tempo change, but I'd have to go back and listen to the tape to really know where it was and what happened.
There will be a recording, because I chose to record today on a whim. I haven't been recording. I guess because we mentioned an email possibly talking about the gap and stuff. And it started very, I felt very innovated when we started, and I was thinking, at a certain point I was thinking, you know, when I talk with somebody and I'm recording for a podcast, something in me tends to take over and I actually bring the energy necessary to make sure that I get a podcast at the end of it, even if I have to edit lots of, you know, meanderings and fruitless lines of conversation and whatnot. Basically, the energy level is higher. So I was thinking about that, and then at a certain point, I think it was while we were talking about the thing, I started thinking, oh, this might make a good podcast. And then I would say something in me started getting into that mode, and I was getting more like as if this was going to be a podcast. And perhaps because I was talking a lot and grabbing the mic, basically, because I cut you off a few times even, you became less talkative. So I wondered if at some level you were aware, I mean, obviously you've been aware of me changing my energy, but also at some level being aware that this could turn into a podcast and then that would interfere with your...
Yeah. Oh, no, I wasn't thinking in those terms, but I did notice you were talking, and the thought that I had at that point was, oh, fucking thank God I'm not talking. He's talking. He's going on. Okay, I'm going to stay back. Finally, I can shut the fuck up. And I was just sitting here so relaxed and happy that, you know, it was sort of like work when normally I was, it's like I'd see the people that I had the attention around, and then I would have that tension, or I'd think of them and the tension would come back. And then I got past the tension, and it was such a fucking relief to not have that tension anymore constantly. So that was sort of, so I was like, ah, good. So I was taking advantage of those moments, and I was very happy. So please, go ahead. Talk all you like.
But
the mic is yours.
Well, isn't there... Because you were talking about earlier about the not wanting to seem stupid and you're not quite sure what's going on and what to comment. I had this experience recently talking to James Howard Kunstler, who's on the podcast tomorrow, and he's a super smart guy, and he's written loads of books, and he's in his 60s, I guess, New York intellectual. So there was some consciousness of him being higher status, and that would make me more inhibited anyway. But also, he was just talking about all the stuff I don't have a clue about, like financialization of the economy and renovations in New York City and energy systems breaking down and stuff I'm just completely clueless about. So there was a period where he was just talking, and I just didn't know what to say, so I just let him talk, and he went on for about 15 minutes, and it was just hearing me going, mm-hmm, all right, you know, and every now and then, and like, just trying to hold my own, insofar as at least, yeah, I'm here. That's a terrible noise. But yeah, it was kind of panicky, so because I knew I was going to have to say something soon, and I didn't know what the hell I was going to say, right? Going to ask an intelligent question at the very least. So that, I presume, is similar to what you were talking about before, like not knowing when to come in and if to come in. So how is that different than what you just described, where I'm talking a lot and you can just sit back and relax? Like, isn't the part of you that's still thinking, oh, I'm going to have to say something at a certain point? He might just stop talking, and then what do I do? And you don't have that.
Well, no, I didn't have that, but if I knew consciously at the time that you were recording and that some of this might end up somewhere, then maybe it would have been different. But at that point, we were just kind of talking, and, you know, I was just taking advantage of that. And maybe I'm just in a relaxed place right now where that sort of anxiety didn't come up quite as quickly, but it did in other instances where we talked, and it was being recorded.
On other occasions. Right.
Yeah.
So, what I was wondering about before, when you were describing you using the metaphor of the workplace, as when you've got to be intelligent before you open your mouth, got to make sure that something intelligent comes out. What I was wondering is, what about letting the thing speak? Right? I mean, isn't that... Do you have that experience where you don't have to know what you're going to say, you can just be relaxed, and then there's an opening and boop, something just comes out of your mouth? And
well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? No, that's not a regular experience for me, but I think it's a place that I can get to, and maybe I have in the past. If I allow myself to get to that place to where I can respond like that. But it's usually not the rule for how I behave in a conversation like that. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, it's basically just being in that place. And I don't think I have often been at that in that place in during a discussion.
During a conversation, you mean?
Conversation, yeah. You know, there's like, oh, I don't know. I don't want to think of a perfect middle ground, because, of course, the perfect middle ground won't be able to be maintained or found or anything like that. But somewhere between just a relaxed, not recorded, just two old friends talking, no anything, no expectations whatsoever on it, versus this is going to be a podcast and this is the name, or we're going to talk about this, and you read these three books first and we have to come up with these 10 things and fill out this questionnaire. It's like, the pressure. Something between the two.
The liminal.
Yeah, towards like, okay, these are the topics. Think about this, contemplate this. Kind of put yourself in that place and come, you know, don't come up with, I don't know. I like to prepare. I like to have like a little script. It's like, oh, here's the point where I'm going to actually say my opinion. Let me get my script out and read it.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty common. I mean, it's pretty normal, I think, for guys at least. Yeah. But I would say that the liminal space that I've been aiming for with the podcast is an extension, a microcosm of the liminal space that I aim for in existence, in my life. When it comes to speaking specifically, that it's not about, I mean, what you gave as an example, you know you're going to record and you've got a few talking points, but other than that, no structure. That's just an externalization, I would say, of the real in-between space isn't between some external structure or no external structure, but between I don't know how to put it, actually, but being spontaneous, but also being coherent, really. Like, I could be completely spontaneous in response to you, completely, but it wouldn't make any sense to be total non sequitur. You know, I'd start talking about how Garbanzo took a shit in the flower bed today, and it was really enchanting, and maybe it would make a nice anecdote. It didn't actually happen today, but a couple of days ago. It was quite enchanting, so I didn't completely make that up. But anyway, it would be really disorienting. As opposed to actually responding to whatever it is you're saying and staying more or less on track, but not really knowing what I'm saying or how. I mean, just because this is my experience more and more, if I'm in the thing, is... And I've said this to you several times, even today, I think. Like, I don't know what I'm going to say now, but I'm going to say it, damn you. So you must have that fear, right? You've got something in you.
Oh, Yeah, I mean, half the time I start talking, it's like, oh shit, I started too soon, and I start talking, and then it's hey, wait a minute, that wasn't too bad, and I keep going, and then eventually I trip and I fall. You know, I always fall flat on my face in the end, but I usually get a couple decent moves off once in a while. You know, so yeah, and when I get my decent moves off once in a while, it's from sort of that liminal type space that you're talking about. When I feel, well, that felt good. When it felt good, it comes from that place. When it feels awkward, it's when I'm nervous and tense and I force it. Yeah. Or when I'm so totally out of it that I'm denying and rejecting and I just go quiet. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have a lot of anxiety around speaking. People wouldn't guess it because I've made a career in quotes. I have to put it in quotes because not making a living.
Because you don't make money.
But, yeah, whatever. I do it constantly. Do it publicly. Public speaker. I have a lot of anxiety around speaking. Like, somehow to me it represents some real primal kind of danger to start speaking and not know what you're going to say, and there's pressure on you to say the right thing. And I mean, I know everybody experiences this, is what you're talking about, but so I guess that's all I'm saying is I have it too, and everybody has it. So what is that? You know, it's like words are so exposing in some way.
Yeah. Well, you know, my own exposure, the exposure I feel, of course, is at least one of the main exposures would be, that guy's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's fucking talking about. And really, why talk if I don't have something to say, you know? If I only talked when I really had something to say, I might never talk again, you know, to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, half of what I say when I've said things, like I say, have started with me babbling or just something blurts out. Sometimes it comes from ego, sometimes it comes from a better place. Sometimes it comes from nervousness, sometimes it comes from being relaxed, you know? But often I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. And being revealed to be a moron, basically.
Yeah.
Not understanding things.
So that's ego, of course. But is it being a moron, you see? Because to me it's more... I mean, yeah, not knowing what I'm talking about obviously is exposing, but it's more the fact that I might be exposed pretending to know what I'm talking about when I don't.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't want to pretend to know anything that I didn't really know. So there's always that sort of anxiety, always watching, making sure that I don't go too far in any direction that I know that I'm just lying about or that I have really nothing to say. I would like to adopt the strategy of holding back on the babbling and trying to conserve my words and think of a better word, better for me to be silent for 5 minutes while I think of a better word to use than to just start to babble. Now, sometimes the babbling is good and works and I like it and it's okay and it might be entertaining, but sometimes it's just I'm still babbling and there's no jokes have come yet and I'm starting to sweat and it's uncomfortable. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, you know? But, you know, I don't want to have that be my only technique. It's like, oh, he just babbles until he finds something to say, you know? I don't want to do that all the time. I'd like to do both things. I'd like to try to be articulate once or twice, you know?
Pithy is a word that's been thrown at me in the recent past. I need to be more pithy, apparently.
You pith on everything. But anyways, yeah. Yeah.
Monkey said to man, I want your fireman. Said to monkey, I want your brain. Monkey said to man, my desire is to be like the mankind. And this was all the monkey said when his world came tumbling down.
Monkey said to man, I want your fireman. Said to monkey, I want your brain. Monkey said to man, my desire is to be like the mankind. And this was all the monkey spoke when his word came tumbling down.
space is mine. And this was all that monkeys built when his world came tumbling down.
La vie dans la jungle, c'est quand même bien sympa. Sur les arbres prêts.